from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, Bay Area residents might find it hard to mock Los Angeles for its traffic congestion anymore. A recent report ranks the San Francisco-Oakland area right alongside L.A. for traffic delays, second only to Washington, D.C. Bay Area commuters waste 61 hours per year sitting in their cars because of congestion. Where is the worst traffic in the Bay, and what does so much idling mean for drivers and for the environment? Our guests will include Tim Lomax, senior research engineer at Texas A&M Transportation Institute and a co-author of the Institute's 2012 Urban Mobility Report. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The Bay Area's traffic congestion can't possibly be as bad as a gridlock in Los Angeles. Well, if you think that, you might want to think again. According to the Texas Transportation Institute's annual Urban Mobility Report released on Tuesday, the San Francisco-Oakland region is now tied with Los Angeles, right behind the nation's capital and second place in the category of yearly delay due to congestion. That translates to 61 hours of delay per year. Nationwide, driving patterns amount, according to the study, to $120 billion in wasted time and fuel, and that's $1 billion over the 2010 figure. Commercial truck drivers alone wasted time and fuel to the tune of $27 billion. In this opening Forum Hour, we take up the topic of traffic congestion, its cost, its consequences, and what to do about it. We've assembled a panel. First, we want to go to College Station, Texas, and welcome Tim Lomax, who's senior researcher and an engineer at Texas A&M Transportation Institute, one of the co-authors of the Transportation Institute's 2012 Urban Mobility Report. And welcome, Tim Lomax.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think I can hear all the Bay Area residents shaking their heads somewhat skeptically, particularly if they've been in gridlock in Los Angeles, saying this can't possibly be. So tell us how you came to this conclusion.
So we get data from a lot of folks driving around, and also from fleet vehicles like delivery package vans. We combine, and so we get speeds on all the major roads in the Bay Area and many of the minor roads. We then combine that with a data set of traffic counts, and we look at the difference in speed from essentially the speed limit to what it is you're experiencing out on the roads every 15 minutes. Look at that time difference multiplied by the volume and get essentially the amount of extra hours that are wasted on each of those pieces of road.
There are more bad day. Spots in Los Angeles, though, aren't there, Jim?
I think there are some very bad spots in L.A. The L.A. region is a very big place, and so a lot of the less congested roads on the outskirts get combined with some of the traffic nightmares on 405 that we all know.
And you also, of course, have brought attention to the amount of CO2 that's released because of these delays. You got about 380 pounds per commuter. That's 56 billion pounds of additional CO2 released into the atmosphere due to clogged roads. I mean, we just happened to have Al Gore on the program yesterday, and so this is something that really in itself ought to be alarming. Are you making recommendations just generally? Because you've done, about 30 years of traffic data?
Right. I think what we've seen is that some sort of mix works really well. I haven't seen anybody get any success at pursuing just one option. And I think that's partly because there's different problems. You know, you have different problems in downtown San Francisco as opposed to the area east of Oakland.
I mean, each community is different, really, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are some recommendations, perhaps, here that can make things better. And, in fact, one could argue that things are somewhat better here in the Bay Area than they are in Los Angeles, different because of bridges and so forth, but better because of a number of things that have been instituted here that have not been instituted in Los Angeles.
Well, I think you benefit from a lot of the operations improvements, the time in the traffic signals, getting the ramp meters on the entrance ramps, time correctly, doing HOV lanes, looking at ways to maximize the number of vehicles that can get on the toll bridges, the transit improvements that you've made, the clearing the crashes, installed vehicles, all those things make for a more reliable system, even if it's not an uncongested system.
And you also talk about not only the Bay Area being good at signals and ramps and all that, but traffic flow. The traffic flow affects the stress on drivers, too. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, I think one of the things that we look at is the frustration level. And when we talk to commuters, they not only care about how much time it might take them on average, but also the stress that's induced from having to make a very important trip. So we estimate that travelers in the Bay Area need to allow about 3 3/4 extra time as compared to how long it would take you to make a free-flow trip. So, for example, if you have to make a trip that would take you 20 minutes on a weekend or an off-peak period, you ought to allow something like 75 minutes during the rush hour to make that trip, to make sure that you arrive on time. That's actually one of the better ratios in the big cities in our study.
Yeah, in fact, Pensacola, Florida is about the best in this category from what I've read. Yeah.
They do not have a Major League Baseball team. They do not have an NFL franchise. They don't have a major symphony. They don't have many of the job opportunities. So, yeah, life is a trade-off.
We're talking to Tim Lomax, Senior Research Engineer at Texas A&M Transportation Institute, one of the co-authors of the Transportation Institute's 2012 Urban Mobility Report. And, Tim, we got a whole panel here assembled to talk about traffic, and I know our listeners are going to want to talk about it. But before we let you go, can you just talk about other areas and how things look for the San Francisco-Oakland area? Because I'm talking about like yearly congestion cost. We're not up there at second place like we are in delays.
But you're pretty close. The Bay Area region congestion cost that we estimate just from the extra time and the fuel is something like $3.3 billion. That's a cost per commuter for a little bit more than $1,250. So you can think of this as about $100 a month worth of a congestion tax.
Well, we go down to fourth place in that category from second place in delay. What about excess fuel consumption? We're down to sixth place.
Yeah, so part of what we're seeing there is the sort of slow and go conditions cause you to waste more fuel than you would if you had free flow travel, and you know, you're looking at a couple of tankfuls a year extra beyond what you would normally consume, and that plays into the CO2 emissions as well.
And you've got cumulative congestion and annual cost. We come out eighth. Talk about those.
Well, part of that is the you're stacked up against some other places like Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, places that are very big, and certainly the $3.3 billion is nothing to get too excited about in terms of making progress. But the New York area has a congestion tab of close to $12 billion, and L.A. is close to $11 billion.
Tim Lomax, thank you so much for being with us on Forum this morning.
You bet. Happy to be here.
And again, Tim Lomax is a senior research engineer, joined us from College Station, Texas, with the Texas A&M Transportation Institute, one of the co-authors of the Institute's 2012 Urban Mobility Report. What do you think about this? I mean, I'm talking about listeners now. We're going to introduce a panel here in a moment, but you may want to weigh in. And particularly, where do you think the worst traffic is and the worst delays are and the worst congestion here in the Bay Area and in Northern California, and what to do about it? That's where I'd like to particularly put the focus. And let me give out the phone number. It's 866-733-6786, toll free. And by the way, if you're listening to us on Sirius, you may want to talk about congestion in your particular area and how bad it is, and comparatively to what you've heard here. Again, our toll-free number available to you now. It's 866-733-6786 if you'd like to join the program. We do welcome your involvement. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can go to our Facebook page or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQED Forum. Let me tell you who else is joining us for the hour. Here in studio, Jim Wunderman is president and CEO of the Bay Area Council, a regional business-sponsored public policy group. And good morning, Jim Wunderman.
Good morning.
Also say good morning to Michael Cabanatuan, who is transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, also here in studio. Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
And Joe McConnell, KQED's, public radio's traffic reporter, also Pacific Coast News Bureau chief for Total Traffic Network, is with us by phone. Joe, good morning.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. And let me begin with Joe, who's been at it 26 years. 880 is still as bad as ever up in Hayward and Fremont, Burlingame, and northward up 101. I mean, those areas, from your perspective, continue to be the most congested.
Yeah, 880 has long been the most horrible, and it remains so. I mean, it's just constantly bad in Fremont. That's probably the worst area. But all the way from San Leandro to Fremont, it's just one bad spot. And 880 in Oakland is really probably second worst.
Did what you hear surprise you, Joe?
No, not really. It puts perspective on what we've seen for years. You know, traffic is a relative thing. We have traffic reports in big cities and small all across the country. And while not everybody is probably as stressed as we are, they still don't like their traffic. Any delay is a problem. If you aren't expecting it, if you're not used to it, probably people in Pensacola aren't really happy with their traffic all the time either.
Yeah, but you warn them, and still they think somehow they're going to get through it. They don't necessarily find an alternative route. And in fact, you're kind of, I mean this with all due respect, one step behind all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, we're better than we used to be. I mean, there's a little less guesswork involved. I remember when we started here doing traffic reports, it was listening to scanners, and then just going by historical experiences and the occasional phone call from people. But then again, back in the olden days, people didn't have phones in their cars very often, unless you were Joe Mannix.
You're dating yourself there, Joe Mannix.
Right.
Well, a lot of the problems are related, and let's go to Michael Cavanatwan on this, really to infrastructure, particularly here in the Bay Area. Yeah?
Oh, absolutely. In the Bay Area, much of the congestion is due to the fact that we're funneled, 20 lanes of traffic funneled into a six-lane bridge, funneled into tunnels. We have these sort of constrictions, these choke points that slow traffic that doesn't happen in Los Angeles, where it's more of sheer volume.
There's just not enough road space, and everybody's using it 8 to 5 for the most part.
Exactly. If you're traveling at 10 or 11 or noon, it may be free flowing.
So, I was struck by something you wrote in one of your columns about this, that on federal holidays you shave off about 5 to 10% of the traffic. If we could only use that as a paradigm and somehow get at it, I mean, we keep talking about more public transportation, more carpooling, the usual sorts of things, but we're not reducing. In fact, as the economy gets better, it gets more congested.
Right. Well, what happens is, particularly traffic on the Bay Bridge is a good measure because they keep careful track of how many vehicles go across the bridge, and it tracks almost directly with the employment rate. But what happens is people who maybe were unemployed or were working less will get a job and start going to work and saying, hey, this is great. There's no traffic. So they drive every day, and then other people do too. And as traffic builds, then the congestion builds as well. Some of those people will switch to BART or AC Transit. The ferries, they'll figure, it's not worth driving anymore. Others, they're used to it, and so they just stick to their cars.
BART and Muni, though, have limited capacity, and we keep reading about that limited capacity.
They do, and BART in particular is planning for the future and saying, look, we have big capacity problems. We need more trains, more cars. We need a train control system that allows us to run more trains, and we need to expand the Embarcadero and Montgomery stations. Muni, I just saw a recent study, is generally over capacity already, which anyone who rides the Anjuda can tell you.
Michael Cavanatwan, again, is transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Jim Wenderman is also with us this morning, president and CEO of the Bay Area Council, a region business-sponsored public policy group. There's a kind of paradox here, Jim. I mean, as I kind of intimated, on the one hand, the congestion hurts business, is stifling the business. On the other hand, the more congestion there is, the more people are employed.
Yeah, congestion certainly is a barometer of how the economy is doing. And one of the things about the Bay Area, we live in a great region, and we attract great companies because we have a great workforce. And one of the things that brings the workforce and maintains that is having a great quality of life, even maybe better than Pensacola in by some measures. So we do need to consider as we get busier and the traffic gets to a point of burden, and this study shows that we're second, most congested in the nation, tied with Los Angeles. It's a serious issue. You know, we have to find new ways and make new investments to ensure that this workforce doesn't feel too impacted by, you know, the daily life, spending too much time in the car, gripping that steering wheel harder, as some of your listeners may be doing right now. So, you know, these kinds of studies tell us we need to think harder and dig a little deeper to solve problems in the long term, projecting for population growth, job growth, and ensure our region can be competitive into the future.
Well, you know, Joe McConnell's been at it 26 years. This Friday I'll officially be at it 20 years. And I can tell you that there's been a lot of talk through the years, particularly in those early years, about smart growth and about telecommuting. I mean, how much have we advanced in those areas?
Well, we've advanced somewhat, and we're positioned to do more. I think we're at the place in technology where, and we have the right region to do it, where we can make some significant improvements in company, organizational, and individual behavior, where we can reduce at least marginally some of the use of the system during the impacted time. So kids going to school at the same time people are going to work. There are some ways around this. We just need to focus on it a little bit more, and we need to have a few more people working at home when they can, going to work at different times rather than during the rush hours, accommodating more people in carpool lanes, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission's leadership on establishing hot lanes where, when they're available, use the HOV lanes to their maximum capacity by charging drivers to be able to use those lanes as a single vehicle. You know, we probably can't build too many more freeways, but we can use what we have much smarter. We can certainly expand the use and of our mass transit systems, but we have to invest in them. And those are the things we have to focus on, specific projects that move more people at the right times better.
Well, limited dollars, of course, and limited resources. But how would we invest in roads, in your judgment? What would be the positive or most constructive along those lines?
Well, you know, I think you have to look at the choke points that Michael Cavan-Antoine mentioned. You know, there are certain areas that are deficient, and they're rated that way, and there are projects associated with those, and many of them have been on the list for many years. We're addressing one in 2013. We'll open the fourth bore of the Caldecott Tunnel for those people who live out in the 680 corridor of the East Bay, Contra Costa County, Alameda County. Drivers will have will finally have get over having a 1950s issue roadway in the 21st century. So there are a number of projects like that that have already been completed in the Bay Area that have made things better and that are under construction or will be in the future if we can fund them.
And Jim Wenderman is president and CEO of the Bay Area Council. I read Michael Cavan-Antoine in one of your articles that you sort of asked the question, since things get really bad and congested on the weekends here, why not do something about that in terms of carpool lanes? And the answer was because they're almost all cars with passengers.
Right. The profile of drivers changes over the weekend. If you were to stand out at the Bay Bridge now and look, there would be a lot of people who are alone in their cars or maybe two people in their cars. You go out there on weekends and, you know, there are minivans that are full of families. There are sports cars with two or three passengers. You know, there are very few people who are just single car drivers.
Let's bring our callers into this, and let's begin, Jason, with you. You're on the air. Good morning, Jason.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I'm just flabbergasted living in, you know, the heart of the technological world with as much high-tech wealth, and combine that with congestion, that there's just not more creative technological solutions that seem to be getting out there in terms of both government or even more specifically public-private type partnerships.
I think you raised a very important question. In fact, I was thinking about this myself, Joe McConnell. All these apps and everything should be helping the traffic congestion, shouldn't they?
It should be, if people would probably use them more. I guess that's why it doesn't help that much. But some things are just never solvable. You know, traffic fits with death and taxes is inevitable. But there are various apps. There's SigAlert. Caltrans has a great site called Quick Maps. There's a couple other ones out there that you can, and of course, all the GPS units, they have traffic on them. Not to say that you shouldn't listen to the radio. You should just get your traffic from as many sources as you can, because it changes constantly. Every second it changes, and you can't have too much of it. And if people were a little clearer on where things were happening before they got in their cars, they might change their pattern or decide to go later. Changing their behavior is really the best solution.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to do now. I mean, with all the gizmos we have.
It is.
Let me thank the caller for that. And we go to another caller here. Susan joining us from Oakland. Hi, Susan.
Hi. So I'm calling just to give you a specific example of my commute because Tim was spot on in terms of the commute time. So I get on at Harrison Oakland on 580 and go over the Bay Bridge to down to 101 to Silver Avenue. I usually leave for work around midday. It takes me 20 minutes. Coming home, it takes me typically one hour and 15 minutes. And those were exactly the figures he gave. So I just wanted to confirm that.
Okay. Well, his metrics are working for you, obviously.
Yes. Thank
you.
Or not.
Or not, yeah. Thanks, Susan. Good to hear from you this morning. And let me get Justin on here. Justin, hi. You're on.
Hi. I had a question about HOV lanes. My experience is that, you know, we turn them on, if you will, during the worst time of the commute in the morning and afternoon, and it cuts the total capacity of the road down. It seems to make things worse. So my question is, what's the evidence that having HOV lanes actually help with congestion?
Michael?
Well, I think you could argue that HOV lanes certainly cut congestion for the people who are able to use them.
Sure.
Now, that varies completely. The most successful HOV lanes in the Bay Area tend to be along Interstate 80, which often ranks as one of the worst commutes not only in the Bay Area but in the country. And that HOV lane is a plus three lane. You have to have three or more passengers in order to get into that lane. And at times it's nearly full, but still moving.
And again, Michael Cabanetwan is transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. If you'd like to lend your voice to this discussion, by the way, you're cordially invited to do so and can let us know what your thoughts are about transportation, how to remedy the congestion problems. We heard a report earlier on from Tim Lomax, senior research engineer with the 2012 Urban Mobility Report. And we do welcome your involvement. Email us, forum@kqed.org, or call us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, and go to our website as well, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment asking a question about where do you think the worst commute is now and where do you think the most congested area. Listener comments, I'm certainly frustrated by my commute. However, if I take public transportation, my commute to work will be 2 hours long as the bus weaves in and out of streets, making many stops. We need point-to-point fast public transport, somewhat like BART. We should not be driving cars in busy metro areas. Some companies like Google and Genentech are already doing that with their own buses. Carpooling is not an ideal option for folks with kids in school, and I'm also wondering if carpooling could be structures to look like rideshare. Jim Wenderman.
Well, carpooling works for a lot of folks, and we want to it's a great efficiency of the system that we have, which is an impacted system, is what the report shows. And so it works for many. For many, it does not. We have 27 different public transportation systems in the Bay Area. They don't link up particularly well. There's a lot of places where we should have subway-type systems like we have or light rail systems where instead we have buses competing with cars. So we haven't invested in the system to keep up with the demand over the course of time, and that's affected our area. We've done some good things, but there's a lot more that needs to be done.
And we asked you, our listeners on Facebook, if you could change one thing about Bay Area streets and freeways, what would it be? Mary says the Gilman Street exit from westbound 80 in Berkeley. And Steve says revisit the carpool lanes. They're empty on a number of roads, especially 280, and they only cause more congestion where four lanes turn into three. The side effect of idling traffic is excess greenhouse gases, which should be the focus in an era of climate change. You can lend your voice here. We do welcome your calls, your emails, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. More from you when we return. We're talking with Jim Wenderman, Joe McConnell, and Michael Cabanetwan, and I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and Bay Area residents might find it hard to mock Los Angeles anymore for its traffic congestion. A recent report ranks the San Francisco-Oakland area right alongside L.A. for traffic delays, second only to Washington, D.C. Commuters waste 61 hours per year sitting in their cars because of congestion. And we're talking about the worst traffic in the Bay Area, what all this idling means for drivers and the environment. We spoke with Tim Lomax initially, who was senior research engineer with the 2012 Urban Mobility Report out of Texas A&M Transportation Institute. And with us for the hour, along with you, our listeners, is Jim Wunderman here in studio, president and CEO of the Bay Area Council, and Michael Cabanatuan, who is transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And Joe McConnell's with us by phone, Pacific Coast News Bureau Chief for Total Traffic Network and KQED Public Radio's traffic reporter. And Joe, you've talked about some strange things that have unfolded over the years, over your 26 years, porta potties in the road and animals and furniture that could probably furnish many mansions if necessary, not necessarily with the kind of furnishings that they would prefer. But how's the general response to those kinds of things here, in your judgment? The quickness, the alacrity of it.
The quickness of the response, you mean, for clearing things?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't really compare it to other areas. I mean, I'm sure if you're stuck in one of those back apps, you think you're sitting there thinking, why haven't they cleared that yet? But I guess the Bay Area does have a pretty good reputation for clearing things more quickly than other areas. And so, therefore, things would be a lot worse if you were in one of those other areas. But, you know, it can take sometimes hours to clear overturned big rigs that are blocking all lanes, especially if there's a fuel spill or if there's any kind of significant injury or even a fatality in an accident. It can take hours, and we've seen many of those things. We've even seen small things cause huge problems. I remember a few years ago on the San Mateo Bridge, a pickup truck lost its tailgate on the span, and it just caused hours of backed up traffic. Apparently, it did some road damage just by falling into the span, and it gouged it, and the lane was closed for a long time. I can't remember all the details now because it was a while ago, but from big to small, it doesn't take much.
Well, you'd think with more congestion and with less resources for personnel and so forth, that those problems would, if anything, multiply. But let's talk a little bit about resources with you, Jim Wunderman. There's a lot of regional planning going on, and the real question in many people's minds is, especially with land use and funding of transportation, where's the money going to come from?
Well, that's a great question. It's probably not going to come from the federal government. So if we're waiting for big checks to come in the way they used to for transportation infrastructure from Washington, the federal government's just too constrained for that to be a reality, at least in the medium term. So we have to look at local and regional sources of funds. Our counties have passed transportation sales taxes. We're going to need to find some new ways. Hot lanes is one way, allowing people to pay into the HOV system. But we have to look at the various options, fees, taxes, tolls, whatever it is. We only bring in enough money to operate the current system. There's really not the funding for the capital. Some of the needs are estimated by MTC for their 2035 plan, over $11 billion shortfall for local streets and roads, $17 billion for transportation capital, $8 billion for operations of existing transit systems, $13 billion for highways. So we're not in any position to do what we need to do to meet the projections of population and job growth in this region over the next generation. And we're going to have to make some hard choices.
Well, Michael Cabanatuan, there's going to be a conversion to more express lanes, and there's going to be possibility of buy-in. How's that going to help, and how does that seem to configure in your mind?
Well, most of the highway expansions that are coming in the Bay Area probably over the next 30 years are going to be what they call gap closures in the carpool lanes. There are places where a carpool lane just ends. Those are going to be extended, connected regionally, and there will be a regional system of carpool lanes. Those will be converted into what they call express lanes or hot lanes, which I prefer express lane. Hot lane is sort of a transportation term, high occupancy toll lane. But what it means is that someone who doesn't have the minimum number of people to get into a carpool lane can buy their way in. Carpools still get in free. Other drivers, single car drivers, can get in for paying a toll. And that toll is sometimes a fixed rate. Other times it's a rate that varies depending on congestion, sort of dynamic pricing designed to keep traffic moving at least 45 miles an hour, I think.
Let me just go to a couple of emails here. And Michael, I'd like your response to a listener named Rick who writes, I'd like to know what your guest thinks about what I have heard called traffic calming or a traffic diet. Examples of this are in Los Altos, where the intersection of El Monte and Foothill Expressway was reduced from a busy four-lane intersection to a three-lane intersection, where a car company waits for two-plus light changes to pass through the intersection. Another example, in Palo Alto, where Arrecedero Road was similarly reduced from four lanes to three, which has caused a huge backup at El Camino. There are many other examples that I could cite, and it seems the traffic design engineers are on an anti-car agenda, perhaps with a mistaken idea that by making car travel so painful, commuters will move to mass transit. Fat chance.
Well, you know, cities always we're talking now about surface streets, and cities always face the difficulty of weighing public safety with, with traffic flowing. I live near a very busy street that was cut down from three lanes to two lanes, and a lot of people were upset with that. But the reality is there were a lot of accidents. There were pedestrians being injured and sometimes killed, and it has slowed down traffic. Now, I know people aren't happy with that, but, you know, how do you weigh five more minutes on your commute versus, a skateboarder being killed?
Jim Winderman, a listener named Kurt, writes, can you discuss the idea of building a new bridge between the Bay Bridge and San Mateo Bridge? It's also referred to as Southern Crossing.
Well, it's something that we've talked about over the years and that Senator Dianne Feinstein has mentioned from time to time as a potential project. We're probably short one bay crossing. The question is, could we afford the tremendous cost that would be involved and the interminable planning and process that would go into building another bridge, or would the billions of dollars that would go toward that be better used for other transit operations and other investments? So, you know, that's the kind of thing that we probably should study, because the flows of traffic in the Bay Area have changed as the jobs have moved around. And so where there was more east-west flow at one point, there might be more north-south flow. We could take a lot of cars off the road if we process them better between where people live and where people now work. Through the recession, as we've come out of it, one of the good things is we now have a stronger economy. We're showing good signs in the Bay Area. But people are living and working in different places. Some people had to move, lost their home, lost their job, took another job, families where one partner goes in one direction, another goes in another direction. So it might be time for us to reassess priorities. But doing a project like the Southern Crossing, there's no question about it. The Bay is very wide at that point. Perhaps if it could be linked with another BART, BART only crosses the Bay once through a tube. If there were a major outage of that for whatever reason, we have no redundancy built into the system. We shut it down, essentially. So I think it's worth looking into these kinds of things, but it's you have to go in with our eyes open.
There's also been a lot of concern in the North Bay about the lack of accessibility to BART, through the years, because BART does not run from the North Bay. And I'm listening to a listener here who says, our family lives in Marin, and we're very interested in an independent school located in Oakland. The commute by car is difficult and unpredictable. We'd like to take advantage of safe public transportation, but we haven't yet found a good option. Are we missing something?
Well, North Bay and Marin County chose not to have BART come in many, many years ago. Now some counties that were not early adopters, like Santa Clara County, have made the jump, and they're bringing BART to their county, so that's something Marin could consider. At least they're building the smart train system, which it should relieve some pressure on Highway 101.
Well, let's bring in more of your calls, and Jamie joins us. Jamie, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I live in Oakland with my wife, and we both commute to San Francisco, and it turns out that it's far less expensive for us both to drive, pay the toll, and find a parking spot in the city than it is for us to take the BART for the two of us, then hop on the Muni to our office, and then take it back. And it seems to me that there's not a real incentive to take public transportation when you can save, I think we save almost $1,000 a year by driving.
Understandable, huh, Michael Cabanatuan?
I hear that from people a lot. And, even the AAA, which is not exactly an environmentalist organization, will tell you that, the cost of driving is somewhere in the range of 50 to 60 cents a mile. So there's this false comparison there. The thing with transit is you hop on BART, you're paying I paid $4 this morning to get from there to here. If I were going across the Bay Bridge, I would have paid $6. But you also have to factor in what's the price of gas, what's the price of insurance, what's the price of maintenance. You don't pay that on public transit. You do if you're driving, but it's spread out over long periods of time, and you know, it's harder to make a direct comparison.
I'd like to read a statement from a listener in San Jose who says, "What causes the most stress for me on the freeways is seeing people who aren't carpooling using the carpool lane. Need better regulation," she suggests. And again, we asked listeners on Facebook, if you could change one thing about Bay Area streets and freeways, what would it be? Tony says we need the ability to commute by bicycle over all spans of the Bay Bridge. Rich says we need raised or separated bicycle corridors traversing every major city and alongside major freeways and boulevards. See Holland. Andy writes, "I get us some decent, connected, and efficient public transport. The original BART plan would have been ideal. Livermore to Sonoma for lunch, dinner in San Francisco, home again, all without driving, parking, or traffic." And Uana says, "I'd love to take the train from San Jose to Palo Alto, but the Caltrain hours are terrible, and if you miss a train, you're stuck for an hour waiting." Let's get some more of your calls on here. Rachel, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just calling because I actually just commuted in my Nissan Leaf, and I wanted to point out that the carbon emissions from an electric vehicle in congestion are actually a great lower than at freeway speeds. And so, you know, as the area transitions to electric cars, hopefully, which are just so comfortable and great, congestion becomes more of a thinking time and a lower carbon use time. So the freeway speeds. The other point I wanted to make is that when I was a kid, I took the school bus to school. My kids have to be driven. This is a huge, huge congestion inducer. That's all.
Okay, thank you for those points. You sound out of breath. Did you run to work or did you drive?
I'm walking from from where I parked my car to my office, sorry.
That's okay, Rachel. Thank you for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. And Brian tweets this, Jim Wenderman, "In the tech center of the universe, how does Caltrain not have Wi-Fi? Even airlines in the Highway 17 bus have it."
Well, one of the things we're really proud of at the Bay Area Council is we induced an investment that will take place over the next few years to modernize the Caltrain system, electrify it, and make it far more reliable. Caltrain usage has doubled in volume as we have a tremendous amount of jobs dispersed between San Jose and San Francisco, people living in one place, working in another. Part of this modernization is to enable better technological use of the system when people are on the train. I don't know what the plan is at Caltrain for having Wi-Fi, but it's something we should certainly check out.
And Aaron says, "Why is no one talking about the trucks? I live in and drive in Oakland, and the freeway is clogged with freight trucks throughout the day. It is dangerous, and there are always stories of overturned trucks causing delays. Why don't they drive at night when the roads are more empty?" And gave out some figures earlier about trucks and the cost of truck transportation, and I think a lot of them do drive at night. Joe McConnell, listener, writes, "I just want to say it sure must be nice for Joe McConnell to not have to say everything in 15 seconds or less. It's fun to get to hear him on the radio at regular speed."
Yeah, it is nice to not have to speak in 30-second intervals, although I'm used to doing that. So I could be a bad interview because I'll just all of a sudden stop talking. I think I've spoken too long.
No, so far you've been a really good interview, Joe. Let me go to more calls. Mark, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
I'm from England, and I must say that I think most people from England, when they come over here, are incredibly frustrated with the roads. We have most of the motorways in England, which are tantamount to freeways out here, are three lanes. You have a slow lane, a fast lane, and an overtaking lane. If you overtake on the inside, you get a ticket. There's order to the roads. Out here, everybody drives all speeds in all lanes. It's just insanity. And the solution is to build more lanes. It's just, there just needs to be an order to it.
Build more lanes, Jim Wenderman. You heard it, huh?
Or behave more like the British, or some combination of both.
Well, I thank the caller. In fact, here's Bill who says, "I visit the Bay Area regularly, and it feels like congestion gets worse year by year. I now live in a place where public investments, safety, and traffic information is provided for bicycle traffic, Denmark, and the investments have paid off in the form of a big portion of commuters on bicycles. Do bikes have a future in the Bay Area traffic picture?"
You know, we're doing the show here in San Francisco, where this city has done an amazing job promoting bicycle use over the years. And San Francisco, in many ways, is coming to resemble Denmark. And the mayor and the Board of Supervisors have been extremely attentive over the years to creating bicycle lanes and the streets look very, very different than they used to. So I think there is a future. BART and the other train systems are using it, integrated systems where people can use their bikes to get to the train and get a bike at the other end of the, when they get off and so forth. So I think the Bay Area's future use of bicycles is going to be on the upswing, and we will be the model of the nation for bicycle use.
Let me get Frank on as our next caller. Frank, hi.
Hi. Why can't we fix the rubbernecking problem? I mean, wait till the cities without a symphony, without a stadium, without anything fun to do, find out that people in the Bay Area rubbernecks much more than they do. While we're best at clearing out accidents, why can't we put in some detection to find people who rubberneck at accident sites? Thank you.
Okay, Michael Cavanaugh, one good question. What can we do about rubbernecking?
I'm assuming that he means, you know, people looking at accidents or someone on the side of the road or whatnot. One of the things that they do in some other metropolitan areas is they have accident investigation zones. If your car, you know, you have a little fender bender, you don't stop on the side of the road or in the road you're in. Your car is pushed or towed or driven, if you can, to the nearest accident investigation site, which is either on a shoulder or off on the next exit. And, you know, the police come there to take the reports and that sort of thing. There's been talk of doing that in the Bay Area. It isn't really there, but the sort of unofficial practice is that during rush hours, there are white tow trucks, the freeway service patrol, that tend to drag accidents off of the freeways very quickly. They take them to on-ramps and off-ramps where investigations are conducted.
Well, along those same lines, Annette writes, just one police officer directing traffic at major choke points onto the Bay Bridge helps enormously when the traffic lights can't move more than one or two cars at a time. Why can't we, the city, afford this? It would be great for the environment, too.
Well, you know, it always comes down to money. People are always complaining about the number of public employees and the pensions and so on, but there's a cost to everything.
And Jeff writes, I have to say, I think Atlanta is worse than the Bay Area, at least from my experience. Let me get some more of your experiences and your calls on here. Terry, join us. Hi.
Hello. Hey, how's it going? My name's Terry, long-time caller.
Yeah, hi, Terry. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, I think one of the biggest problems with inner-city congestion is the lights and the way the lights are timed with pedestrians. You know, you have north and southbound have a green light, and the pedestrians also can go, you know, having to turn right or left, the cars just back up waiting for people to cross the street, you know, one listener said mentioned England. I know someplace in England and even Japan, other countries, what they do is, you know, they let the cars go both directions, and then let all the pedestrians go, you know. And I think this would also be a safer way for pedestrians to cross the street, and it would alleviate so much congestion.
Well, I thank you for that suggestion. Anybody want to comment?
Well, you know, there are places in San Francisco where that is done. You know, out in front of the Moscone Center, for example, they have a light that, you know, is timed to allow cars to go, and then pedestrians get their turn, and you can cross diagonally.
Thank you for the call, Terry. And on we go to another caller, and that's Timothy. Thank you for waiting. Timothy, join us.
Yes, I think the studies that are often, every so many years, there's traffic studies about this traffic situation around the Bay Area. And so much, I think, people look at these studies as being nothing more than self-serving propaganda devices. The number one problem that BART had was red ink year after year. Only when Santa Clara voters here in Santa Clara County voted to pass bringing BART to Santa Clara County in 2010, by 0.1%, did the red ink go away. These studies are nothing but propaganda devices.
Okay. Thank you for that opinion. And some more opinions I'm going to read here. David writes, at the turn of the 20th century, there was a manure problem in New York City with all the horse-drawn carriages. So much manure, people didn't know what to do with it. Then the automobile came of age, and technology saved the day. Today, we have so many automobiles, new construction projects cannot possibly keep up with congestion. Can technology save the day again? Autonomous vehicles that communicate with each other to maximize efficiency and flow and prevent crashes are not far off the horizon. Jack says congestion may seem overwhelming and impossible to reverse, but all congestion is at the margin of capacity. So if you can cut traffic by just 5% from a gridlocked 103% of capacity, you quickly fall back into relatively smooth flowing traffic. That happened in the 1984 LA Olympics when just a few percent of commuters, fearing nightmarish congestion, took vacation and a miracle ensued. Easiest driving of the decade. Point is, you don't have to make massive cuts in driver population. Just a relatively few opting for alternatives does the job.
Yeah, but see, that's a lot easier to said than
Yeah, Joe Mercado, go ahead.
Well, I mean, this gets to changing human behavior. It's the hardest thing to do, but I mean, it is the least expensive and most effective. It's cheaper than building new freeways and building new train systems, but it's really, really difficult to do. A study done last month by some researchers at UC and MIT, engineers working together did a study that it was called groundbreaking, but it just verified what traffic reporters have long known, that most traffic congestion is caused not so much by accidents or mishaps, but by too many people doing the same thing at the same time on the same roads. And it says small changes, yes, can make a big difference, but people can't often make a big difference. They have to go where they have to go when they need to go there. Jobs and schools start at a certain time. They end at certain hours. Technology can help if people could telecommute, but their boss has to allow that, and that assumes that their job doesn't require some kind of human contact. This is the reason I like traffic reporting so much, is because it's a big study of human behavior, and you can't fight human nature in many ways. The suggestion that, well, why can't we just end rubbernecking? Why can't you stop the sun from setting? Why do you think reality TV is so acceptable or so popular? Why do housewives in different cities have so many popular shows? Changing lanes is one of the biggest problems with traffic, because people get impatient, or they think they can game it and get to a better lane, or they play their drive like a chess game. It's a big strategy game. And this, of course, you have to bring up drunk driving and other impairments and distractions.
And road rage.
And road rage.
Yeah. Apropos, Jim Wenderman, of some of the comments we're hearing now from Joe about human behavior and the role of human beings and all that, Lucas, I don't mean to put you in the role here of being a crystal ball gazer, but he says, what impact, if any, do you anticipate from self-driving cars like the Google self-driving car? And it's kind of a curious question in many ways, because there are going to be more and more self-driving cars. I think they're inevitable.
Well, first, it's great to hear Joe McConnell getting into it like this. This has been long awaited. So congratulations, Joe, and you're doing great. I can't predict how soon it will be that we'll have self-driving cars. Clearly, having Google behind it is a sign that it's more reality than some sort of fiction. But clearly, there are technological approaches that are currently under study that will become the norm, whether it's in 5 years or 10 years, that will change the patterns. They'll allow cars to be driven much closer to each other. They'll assure a steadier flow of traffic. They'll change the way signal systems work. We're just at the beginning of an age of a smart transportation system that will improve things. And I think the caller who spoke about improving things at the margin makes a really good point. We don't have to get all the cars off the road, but if we can make some marginal shifts through a number of different methods, improve types of vehicles, systems, use of the freeways and roads, one of the aspects we've worked on for a long time is trying to get people and development to occur more toward to the inside of the region rather than to the outside. So I suspect strongly that some of the hours that are being spent that are driving these numbers up for the Bay Area are actually occurring of people sitting in traffic at times like 5:45, 6 in the morning in places like Tracy and Manteca and certainly Antioch, because they have to leave so early in order to get predictably to Silicon Valley or to San Francisco, and that we can change that by enabling through things like improving the California Environmental Quality Act, which is actually making intended to improve the environment, is actually become a detriment to it, enabling urban development to occur so people can live and work and bike and have a better life. So, these are some changes that can be made, which collectively enable the Bay Area to be the smart region that it is and show the way for us to succeed without massive investments in new freeways and roads, which really are impractical in a built-out region.
And as we've suggested, technology can help lessen congestion, but technology is a two-edged sword, too. I mean, we have more people, despite the punishments and the punitive side of things, texting now than ever before when they're driving, and pretty soon I suspect maybe they're going to be Skyping while they're driving. I don't mean to be that flip about it, but you know, the technology has certainly both sides. So let me go to another caller here, and Brian, that's you. Hi.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Yes. I've wondered if there's any ideas of giving incentives to jobs for getting employers out at different hours, because you know, I hear that the biggest cause of traffic is there being employment, you know, and traffic shifts from employment going up in certain areas, and wondering about changing the hours of where people arrive and leave to work could help.
That would certainly make a difference. I think
that
Jim Wunderman,
huge difference.
Yeah.
If people could only start working, for instance, now or 11 o'clock. I'm looking at the traffic sensors right now, and this would be a wonderful time to have to get to work. There's almost nothing going wrong, except where a few incidents are, or of course in Antioch on Highway 4 West, where it doesn't get better till about noon.
And we'd have more listeners for the second hour of Forum, because the numbers seem to go down in the second hour because of commutes. We obviously have more in the first hour.
Yeah.
We could change that whole nature of things as well. Any other recommendations before we wrap this up, Michael Cannon-Adler?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it is interesting that when you give people flex time and say, you know, you can come to work earlier, you can come to work later, most people seem to go to work earlier. So it really just kind of extends the gridlock.
On that note, we have come to the end there. One can hope that the congestion will diminish. One of the things we believe in here in public radio is that when we tell you about ways to be more aware as citizens about what's going out there on the roadways or anywhere else for that matter, that you can make a difference, and I hope you do. I want to thank Tim Lomax, who was with us earlier, senior research engineer with Texas A&M Transportation Institute, and he's one of the co-authors of the Transportation Institute's 2012 Urban Mobility Report, which essentially kicked off this discussion this morning. Thanks to Jim Wunderman, President and CEO of the Bay Area Council, for being with us this morning. And thanks to you, Michael Cadenatwan, transportation writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. And thanks to Joe McConnell. More time than you've had on the air in a long time, Joe. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Michael. I'll be up in a moment with my 30 seconds.
We are waiting with that with bated breath. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. Forums produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll and executive producer Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.